This is the Technical Difficulties. We're playing reverse trivia. In front of me, I have a stack of trivia questions. I'm going to read out the answers. All these three have to do is guess the questions. Chris Joel. Gary Brannan.
Hot water bottle.
And Matt Gray.
I'm still laughing at the joke we made before we started.
Which will never make it to air.
It was good, though.
Our first answer, Oxford English Dictionary. What is the question?
What is big book full of words? All right. Oh, yours.
What do you not want to stick on the bottom of a car in a war zone instead of an IED?
OED.
OED.
You certainly don't want to get that confused with an IUD.
The Oxford Explosive Device.
No, I was going with Oxford Explosive Dictionary.
Oh, yeah.
Is it the best-selling book by a certain publisher?
We are looking for someone who worked on it.
Wordsworth.
That'd be good.
With a name like that.
So it's someone who worked on it.
Yes. After the First World War, someone spent 2 years as a lexicographer working on the W's.
Churchill.
After the First World War.
Still?
Tolkien.
Yes!
Ah!
Where did you dredge that from?
It fit the timeline and he was a linguist, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
He knew English. I thought his books were written entirely in Elvish and bullshit.
You haven't looked under W, have you?
He's still watering it down so it'll work on the quill that takes the time.
No, woke my wife up the other night by shouting in Elvish. I was talking in my sleep.
Oh.
Talking in my sleep. Come on.
I thought you were going to make an Elvis Presley joke.
Hey. Yeah, I was waiting for it.
Well, you were wrong.
Oh, well.
Yes, Tolkien was responsible for words from Waggle to Warlock and many other
of
W's.
Of course.
Right. Warlock.
Yeah.
Hang on. So what are those words that Tolkien didn't put Warlock in the dictionary? That's a much older word. So
No, these are just some of the words he would have worked on with the W's.
How would you work on how? Because they're already
there. It was already in the dictionary.
Well, think about it. Your original OED, if they still got that one in the bookshop in York.
Probably.
There was a place on...
The bookshop.
Yeah,
in the one
bookshop, there was a second-hand place in York that had an original OED less two volumes.
Right.
It was missing like TA to TS or whatever. Yeah. And it was that long in the original folio edition from whatever year Tom can Google while I'm talking.
That's my job.
If you look at the definitions that would be in there then and then port them to 1917, they're already going to need rewriting stylistically and comprehension-wise.
I just never really thought that you would redraft a dictionary. Like, once you've defined the word, this is great. It's just it's just blokes in a room with pipes arguing over words.
Well, so I have Googled the dates, and I think we were both under the impression that the OED is very old.
Mm.
Perhaps because it's associated with like Oxford University, something like that.
Is this the first edition?
It was not until June 1857 that a series of intellectuals in London, unconnected to Oxford University, expressed interest in compiling a new dictionary. A and B for a new English dictionary came out in 1888.
Oh, God, was he doing W because that was as far as they'd got?
That was as far as they got.
Brilliant.
In the New English Dictionary, later the Oxford English Dictionary, they had not got far enough. He was working on the W's.
He was working on the Oxford English Dictionary definition
rather than the other ones.
A derived one from...
So you've got to define words without making reference to other dictionaries in a way that might be legally actionable.
So it's like doing university homework, but without copying and pasting Wikipedia.
Fantastic. I love that. We can't quite call it that, because the other dictionary does call it that. Can we find another word? No, we've not got to Y yet.
And we haven't got a thesaurus yet, because we started on the dictionary.
That's a good point. When they were writing A and B, it must have been really difficult, because they didn't have any other words from further
on.
How could they even speak to each other if they hadn't invented the words? What a new sound you've just brought.
We've got to remember the OED is not just the definition of words. There's a load of other stuff in there. And these were some of the shortcomings.
Well, isn't it?
Right, so it's usage. It is finding the first reference to that word in
etymology.
History. Yep, etymology, synonyms, different versions. Like, there is a lot of work that goes into each one of those definitions.
I think the, most of the time when I'm looking up a dictionary for a word, it's for the etymology.
Right.
Yeah. Because when you realise the thing that you've always been saying actually has meaning to it, you go, where. When did Lord of the Rings come out? Or The Hobbit, whichever came first?
Written in stages between 1937 and 1949. Publication.
That's why he lost his job because of the war.
Yeah, because he just defined it. Couldn't have fun till then.
Oh, yeah, just before Warlock, which inspired Lord of the Rings. War, it's right there.
It was a conflict before then.
It was apparently the Waggle to Warlock range. I stand corrected here. I was thinking it was just those words. It was Waggle to Warlock.
Waggle to Warlock.
Waggle to Warlock.
I'm sorry, I have got the thought there that Tolkien sat there and has to define wanker.
He does. He does. It's in there.
And he's looking at someone going, ha.
Yes, J.R.R. Tolkien spent 2 years as a lexicographer for the Oxford English Dictionary. Our next answer, Brian Eno. What is the question?
What's Brian Wan backwards?
Hey!
No, that would be...
Good luck.
Eno...
Neb.
Neb.
Yep. Eno Neb.
Eno Neb.
Clock of the Long Now... No. Clock Along Now is a thing that Brian Eno's involved in, which is a clock that will tick exceptionally slowly. I think you might have done the sound for it. There's a version of it in the Science Museum.
I thought that was Jem Finer.
Stuart Brand. But Brian Eno's part of it, definitely.
No, I'm thinking of the thing at Trinity Boy Wharf that's Jem Finer.
That's long player.
He's part of
long
it. Player.
Just his arm. Yeah. Just doing the second hand.
It's God, that's a Doctor Who plot, isn't it? We're designing a clock for 10,000 years. Yeah, oh, very good. And the last piece we need is you. That's a Doctor Who plot.
Isn't it like it's going to tick once a year and chime once a century and move hands once a century?
Yeah, building it somewhere in a desert in the US, I think.
That's it with the library and everything as well. It's a really good book, but Brian Eno's part of that.
It's absolutely nothing to do with the
Ascent.
Question, but it's a good...
Apollo Ascent, that tune?
It's actually something... far better known than that. It's probably his best known work.
Is it Finger of Fudge is just enough to give your kids a treat?
Don't be daft, that was Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
He's 80s synthesizer music, isn't he, Brian Eno?
He is, yes. Although this was a little bit later than that.
I can't think of any... Did he write a TV theme tune for something ridiculous that we wouldn't have thought of?
Yeah.
Certainly a theme... Tune is probably the wrong word, but certainly music that everyone here will.
Because like Going for Gold is Hans Zimmer.
Airport music.
Oh, he released music for airports in 1979. That's in here, yes. Yeah. And synthesizer in Roxy Music, 71 to 73, so a little earlier than that. He had some work in the 1990s.
Is it the Intel jingle?
Now we're getting close.
Oh, Windows... Windows, is it Windows Startup and Close Down?
It's the Windows 95 Startup Sound.
Aye, aye, aye.
That is a Brian Eno composition.
Weirdly, that's incredibly short for Brian Eno.
It's not the full version. You hold the start button down.
You've got a good 3 hours.
Yeah. It's Windows 95, so it's the blue screen of death, and you still keep getting that one sample going. I was once listening to some dance music on an old computer, and I didn't realise that it had crashed.
This is the startup sound for Windows 95, composed by Brian Eno, and... this year added to the US Library of Congress's National Recording Registry.
No way,
does that
really?
Make it public domain?
No.
But it means that the source code for the sound will have to be preserved.
Yeah.
Our next answer is Ribble. What is the question?
One of the houses at my school.
I don't know if you want... Do you want... Because that will pretty much dox which school you went to. I don't know if you want that information.
He doesn't go as often now.
No.
He gets in trouble if he just walks in now.
Very rare, though. I sometimes pop in for the odd science lesson, but, you know, sit at the back in the old uniform. Nearly fits. Ribble. It's a river, isn't it?
It is.
The Ribble Valley is where the river goes, isn't it, as well?
Through Ribblesdale, near the Three Peaks.
We're looking for something else that it goes, well, past, technically, I guess.
Oh, it's Yorkshire, I know that.
Large bits of Lancashire.
Yeah. Mm.
Three Peaks, Penigent.
We're looking for a town that sits on the north bank.
Buxton.
Sattle.
It's Preston.
Preston!
Oh, is it that far north?
That is the wrong side of the Pennines.
Preston and South Ribble.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is
a town.
There is a good fact on my card here. The Ribble rises in Yorkshire and does something that no other Yorkshire river does.
Leaves.
Oh, well.
Wow. Goes to Lancashire.
Yes.
Oh, it's a West Coast tributary rather than the right coast.
Ah, yes, so the two close. Cardinal directions.
West and right coast.
It is the only major river to rise in Yorkshire and flow westward. It also has something that very few other rivers have.
A passport, if it's going that way.
A bit where it goes uphill.
A range of clothing.
You're not quite right with that, but there's something weird with the water.
Well, rivers have to flow down, so does it end more northerly than it starts?
Rivers usually flow down. This does flow down. There is a very brief exception to this occasionally.
Is it when it goes up? A reverse waterfall.
I'm being very cautious here, because if I give you one more hint, you will all get it immediately.
I assume it goes via a reservoir and therefore has a pumped section or something.
Oh, there's a lift.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit gets in. Goes up.
That's what water wheels are for, isn't it?
No.
Is it canalated? Is it a canal and therefore technically can go up or something
no,
like that?
No, the River Severn has this as well.
Does it have a bore?
It has a bore.
Oh, cool.
The Ribble River has a tidal bore.
His name is
so
Stephen.
So it goes backwards.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how the physics of a boar work, but yes, there is a...
It's like a pig, but more hungry.
But more boar, yeah, more tusky.
Yes.
Isn't it tides and stuff, that because it goes into an estuary, and it for whatever reason, because tides are just like where the water lifts, isn't it, I think is sort of the general...
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
It's where the moon lifts the water. So it does it to the point that it can only go back up it or something like that by the way the coastline works, so it shoves it backwards.
And when I was a tidal boar,
when he was a tidal boar.
The other thing that the River Ribble does as it flows into Lancashire, hopefully it delivers amazing amounts of sewage into Lancashire and Yorkshire as well.
That's what it deserves.
Which brings us to our next answer. Birch. What is the question?
So is it the tree we're talking about?
No, we're looking for something that was made out of birch wood.
Boats.
The Queen's staff of office.
You are.
So you say the Queen's staff. Sorry, Rob.
They've all been carved. No, a wand of office. That's what it was called, isn't it?
Bows.
Bows?
Ooh, isn't birch a bendy wood?
Silver birch is weird in that the fibres overlap like that, which makes it a bugger to cut, but I don't know what that does for flexibility. You used for longbows.
I knew it was a particular...
Osage and orange wood are good, but...
Because it's got to take the weight.
Yeah, it's got to be strong and pliable, yeah.
Yeah, and not go when you let it go.
Well, you get birch plywood is the pretty-looking plywood.
Yeah. I was saying wonderful...
Oh, hang on then. Birch ply is good ply.
Yeah.
Mosquitoes. Second World War aircraft, wooden built aircraft in Havilland.
De Havilland, yeah.
Now, between the two of you, you've hit most of it. Matt, you said boat. You named a big old plane.
What's the one? It's the flying boat. Was it Spruce Goose? Not Spruce Goose. Is it Spruce Goose?
What's the Spruce Goose made of?
Yeah.
Birch.
Correct. Yes.
It took all three of us.
Sorry, I was going off into there is one flying boat that they've just stopped using. And then suddenly I was like, Spruce Goose. And yeah, to describe it.
Could someone fill in Spruce Goose for me?
Howard Hughes' biggest ever daftest thing that flew for about 300 feet and then got parked.
Yes.
They didn't really mean it, did they?
Well, I think he did. But by that time, he was living on his own in a hotel and completely obsessed with his own cleanliness. So his engineers perhaps put something together for him and then tried to sidle quietly out of the room.
Yes, the mechanics used the nickname Birch Bitch for it. It was built of wood because of wartime restrictions in aluminium or aluminium.
Oh, yeah.
Officially the Hughes H4 Hercules. What was it actually meant to be used for?
Flying.
What was meant to be...
Was it like a big troop armaments transport thing because it the war?
Yes.
I can't think of any other reason they'd let him build it at that time.
An 8-engine wooden flying boat.
I mean, that just sounds great though, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You'd love a go on it.
No, I'd rather settle for something slightly smaller that flew.
It did fly.
Counts.
There's a De Havilland Museum, which is just near South Mimms Services on the M25 because they were building that in like a barn of a big house because it then didn't look like an airfield and didn't get hit. So, and there's a load of enthusiasts there rebuilding some out of like balsa wood, and like it looks like a terrible DT project of a plane. But
this is what I like about British aeronautics engineering, especially up to sort of the 60s, 70s, where we had loads of companies, because you know you had the British Airship Company, or British Airships were built in Beverley, which is just a fantastic place. Concorde's built in Bristol.
Well, they moved Short Sunderland production, so anti-submarine flying boats. They moved it to the shores of Windermere.
That's brilliant.
Because it gave you the space to take them off, but the whole thing was covered by trees, so it didn't look like a target, because it's in the middle of the Piggin Lake District.
Is it the Bristol Beverley? The one that's like, there's only one of them, where it was a massive...
Blackburn
Beverley. That's it. So
Bristol Beverley sounds like a Second World War stripper.
All right, my darlings. The Blackburn Beverley, which was, again, a troop transport, that was the same idea of things like the Hercules? No, what was before that? Troop transport. A bit like, you know, the American one, the one that's got rocket starts on it,
C-17.
C-17. So the Blackburn Beverley's like the C-17, or the idea is of we will transport men and tanks or vehicles, but they kind of design the tail so it's two struts that go out backwards, and that's where you sit the blokes in it. Do you remember though, right at the end of the tail bit with the windows in, where you'd sit people, there was a toilet.
Was there?
No, that's
right on
gone.
The tail.
Long gone.
I've been on the A400M, which is the replacement for the Herc, and that has a urinal built into the
turbo props.
Well, it's just behind it. It's the tail bit of it, and like there's a little window, and below the window is a urinal, so you could just look out the window and piss.
Well, why not, eh? And who's going to see you at that altitude?
It's not in a cubicle.
Meanwhile, the formation flying.
The red arrows.
There's just someone in the front of the jet going, oh.
Sorry, the red arrows and the yellow brick.
Eye contact.
Sorry, just as you're pissing above the red arrows, see, you've got red, blue, yellow.
Yes, Howard Hughes's prototype aircraft, the Spruce Goose, was actually made of birch. Which brings us to our final answer of the show. Haiti and Liechtenstein.
How would you describe me if I really didn't like something?
Haiti and Liechtenstein.
No, just Haiti.
Okay.
So it's, what do those two nations have in common?
Yes, absolutely.
Tiny?
Then certainly not big.
Small. Are they principalities?
Iodine.
Eh?
I think every house in Liechtenstein has a packet of iodine tablets because they're too close to some nuclear power stations.
Now, that's certainly true for some bits of the UK.
The entirety of Liechtenstein, the entire country.
Yeah. I think if you live within 3 miles of...
3 Mile Island.
Well, yeah. 3 or 4 miles of one of the nuclear power stations in the UK, or where nuclear submarines dock, you are just given a packet of iodine tablets. And like, if this alarm goes off... Have those. Fine, but have those.
That's the thing, because there's a radioactive thing that your body can absorb, but if you get a particularly stable a salt of iodine or whatever, your body will absorb that before the nuclear one comes along and gives you cancer. Mm.
So basically you can't take in any more iodine.
Because it's filled up all the holes where it can go.
I see.
I might have seen this in a TikTok, so it could be bullshit. Is it about humanitarian disasters?
No, it's not. It's about the 1936 Olympics. This is a sports and leisure question.
But it's tripping dangerously close to a humanitarian disaster.
Good point. Yeah. Very good point, yes.
Were they the only two competing nations that... didn't win a medal? It's a big did or didn't, is it, sort of answer?
It's not, no. This is something that they noticed, that the delegations at the 1936 Olympics
were noticed. The delegations from Liechtenstein very favourably treated, and the delegates from Haiti less so?
Only one athlete from Haiti actually took part in those Olympics. He was a weightlifter who was studying in Paris at the time.
Oh, fair enough.
He injured himself in training the day after the opening ceremony and did not compete.
Oh,
Same flag, never known about it.
Yes!
Oh.
Spot on. Liechtenstein fielded 6 athletes, none of whom won medals.
At least he didn't fly all the way from... at least he didn't get a boat all the way from Haiti to then injure himself.
To drop a weight on his foot the day before, or drop a bottle of salad cream on his foot, or one of those other comedy injuries that's taken athletes
broken
out.
Broken toe because of...
Fell down the stairs while rogering someone.
Yes, they noticed that they had the same flag. For the first time, apparently, when the delegations met at the 1936 Olympics.
Is their flag red, black and yellow, but with a crest on it or something like that?
Ah, now, blue and red.
Yeah, that's Liechtenstein.
Liechtenstein added a crown to their flag.
To differentiate.
Haiti added the national crest to the flag.
Which was coincidentally... a crown.
I know, we'll both add something to that. Oh, damn.
But it only happens at every Olympics that they notice. Got it
every
sorted?
4 years.
Got it sorted.
Oh, come on.
Sometime in the middle 90s, they both pick the same clip art. And it's like,
specifically that Microsoft... No, it's just Microsoft Word art.
Yeah. It's just...
Ready? Oh, for f***.
You said you wouldn't. Have you seen some of the US state flags? Some of them look very clip art.
And the city and town ones, yeah.
Oh.
But it's the same thing. Up until relatively recently, lots of countries also had the same tune for their anthems. So there was quite a lot that had what we would now today call God Save the King was their anthem.
Gee, how did that happen?
No, they didn't. Not that they had God Save the King, they had a tune that was the same, and it's not like we invaded them or nothing. I'm pretty sure.
Your Honour.
No, I'm pretty sure.
It's a traditional tune that pre-World War One
Germany was the same tune.
Oh, yeah, the US calls it My Country, 'Tis of Thee.
Yes.
Same tune, very different lyrics.
Oh, so it is, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's quite a few, which must have been really funny at the Olympics, as no one knew when to stand up and salute.
So, yes, the 1936 Olympics.
36, everybody knew when to stand up and salute.
That's true. It went cold, isn't it?
Yeah. Haiti and Liechtenstein realised they had the same blue and red flag. Congratulations, Chris. It's your win today. You win a round of applause that goes on for slightly too long.